Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.
Shrink Wrap Radio number 131, Confronting Death, January 4th, 2007. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
So it's in a very important way, it's a mirror. The death of another is a mirror of the unconscious drives within ourselves, that part in ourselves that we do not want to look at or deal with. And along with that, I think there's a great part of our life that we haven't dealt with as well. Many of the pains, angers, the disappointments, just in the process of life itself that we avoid. And I think it's very important to not repress. And I think that's part of it as well. Years of not dealing with things, not knowing how to, it becomes accumulated. It's like filling up an empty peanut butter jar and filling it with layers of peanut butter, and then trying to get to the oil at the bottom or something. It takes some picking at. It takes some evolving. It takes some looking at.
That was the voice of my guest, Stephen Schaps, M.A., M.F.T., Stephen Schaps, M.A., is a marriage and family therapist who practices body-mind psychotherapy in Portland, Oregon. He specializes in the practice of somatic psychotherapy and anger and stress management. He works with individuals, couples, families, and groups in his private practice and leads workshops and seminars in anger and stress management, in addition to mindfulness, meditation, and somatic sensing. He also leads workshops and provides coaching in executive and staff management. He's a marriage and family therapist, and according to his website, he has certifications in anger management, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, also known as EMDR, clinical hypnotherapy, marital and couples therapy, and codependency. He has extensive training in Ericksonian mind-body healing therapies, meditation, somatics, cognitive behavioral therapy, movement, breath, Buddhist meditation, and yoga. Of late, he has added to his roster of activities, workshops, and classes on death and dying. Beyond all this, he's also been a student of Native American healing traditions. Now, here's the interview. Stephen Schaps, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here and to be talking with you again, David. Thank you.
Yes, I'm glad to have you. And you do say again, and that's because I had interviewed you previously for my other podcast series, Wise Counsel. And I believe on that show, if I recall correctly, we were talking about anger.
Anger and stress, I believe, but primarily anger.
Yeah. Yes. And more recently, you've become interested in the topic of death, and I believe you've been offering some workshops and doing some teaching around that, as well as it seems to be finding more of a role in your work. What is it that's focused your interest on death?
Well, personal experience. Recently, as a matter of fact, specifically in October of 2007, my father passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And I had the wonderful opportunity of spending 11 days with him and watching that process, being with my experience around it. And I've had interest in supporting others with their own relationship around death and dying and their experiences and their feelings and their thoughts, as well as providing comfort, as well as working with them in terms of their pain.
Well, I'm struck by your phrase that you had the wonderful opportunity of being with him for 11 days. Maybe you can say a little bit about that, because many people would not think of that as a wonderful opportunity.
great question. As a therapist, my perspective around death and dying is kind of multidimensional, and also my relationship with myself about what I think death and dying is. And for some reason, I took the perspective that it was an opportunity rather than an adversity to be with my father around this time. And let me explain why. Life and being alive is very special. And I believe that every moment that we take a breath and we share things with one another and be present is that blessing. So I looked at every moment in that relationship, in that time with my father, as an opportunity to observe, to be with him, to express myself, to watch this process, and to be as mindful as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, did you people talk about closure and getting closure around the time of death. Were you and your father able to talk about any maybe issues that had been unresolved between the two of you, or was it more of just a kind of ordinary being together and yet special at the same time?
Yes and no. It was special and ordinary, and I had the great fortune of working on many of my issues around my father some time ago, yet I discovered that every time my conversation with him about our relationship always seemed to precipitate some upset. And so I took the view that it was my job to take my own responsibility for clearing up my own issues and begin to see my father as a loving soul and someone who was doing his best. And I made up my mind to bring my heart and acceptance to those times that we were together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I rather than heal anything, I really took the view that many of the things were already healed, and it was my responsibility to deal with my own judgments, my own projections, my own fears, the upsets, the angers with his behavior towards me, as a way of looking past them and just seeing the human spirit there.
Mm-hmm.
And coming into my heart and being present with him in that way.
Yeah. And on his side of it, did there seem to be anything that he was sort of pressing to bring closure to before passing?
No. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. And that was surprising to me.
Uh-huh.
There was nothing at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he was grateful that everybody was there to see him and be present with him, and there was very little pain.
Well, that's a blessing. That's wonderful. Now, most of us avoid confronting death. We just don't like to think about it. What is it that we fear, do you think?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, as you know, and just speaking to your audience, all a sundry of mind chatter, thoughts about our beliefs and our values, what we think death is and what it isn't, comes up, and or at the same time can be denied. Our viewpoint can be so varied, and yet at the same time, my view is that sometimes we're afraid to accept the very fact that life is impermanent. The ego does not want to die. Our ego is designed to survive and make us live. Mm-hmm. And do the things that we need to do in order to live. And yet, at the same time, it does come. It does come to all of us. And sometimes, I mean, it's interesting in talking with many people and dealing with my own issue around death and dying. Sometimes when I sit with myself and the feelings and the fears come up about it, I kind of apply some mindfulness. I take some breaths, and within a few minutes, there's a calm. I let go of my thoughts about death and dying, about not living anymore. And there's a peace that comes over me. And I've come to see that in a way that process, that experience, is a form of dying. Dying to the thoughts, to the fears, to the judgments, to holding on, to thinking that the things I have and my accomplishments will go on with me. And so there's some peace in that for me. Mm-hmm. And in talking with others who are passing and discovering what their fears are, it seems to be they would like the same thing. They would like some peace. In some way, not everybody sees it that way. Their ego keeps them holding on to life. And yet, at the same time, we do that. There's nothing wrong with that. In the moment that we do pass, it's such a personal and individual experience. Most people want to be heard and be seen and be listened to, and somebody around them to care and be able to relate to them. And yet, I will never know what that experience is until my own time comes.
Right, right. I'm thinking, too, of religion, and, you know, it could be argued that maybe religion has evolved in large part, in some fairly large measure, as a way of helping to reconcile people to death, either, you know, by giving them some sense of what lies beyond. Do you have a particular religious perspective yourself? And, you know, and what do you think is the role of religion for the people that you've been working with?
Let me answer the last question first, if I may.
Okay.
My view is that all religions serve a purpose of affording peace and calm, for the most part. That's my view.
Mm-hmm.
And
in particular relation to death, or more generally?
I think both. Mm-hmm. In looking at religions and reading about them, there seems to be a common thread of finding peace, finding ways of finding peace. And I think that's the main thread throughout all religions, for the most part.
Okay.
And affording a way that people can use as a tool. Some ways are better than others. Some people find that they need to look at a lot of different things. But that's my view. I'd like to hold that view that they all serve that purpose. My religion, I was born Jewish, though I have taken the view to understand other people, it's necessary for me to learn about their viewpoints around religion. And in doing so, my own evolution has led me to kind of a perspective of acceptance, learning to accept what is present, if I can find a way to acknowledge it, in terms of peace, in terms of forgiveness, in terms of learning about what judgments are, about myself and for others, accepting that life is impermanent, and though that brings up anxiety, and at the same time, I've come to learn that underneath anxiety is a peacefulness, a calm, a love, a heart centeredness that exists. And along with that comes a view that my life is about purpose, about coming back to and discovering ways to coming back into my heart. And so that leads me to the view that our time of passing is about letting go of more of the judgments and fears and coming back into acceptance for ourself and giving gratitude for this moment of life. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of leads me, that has led me to be with others who are dying. And recently I was gifted with an opportunity to work with somebody long distance over the phone who was a lady who was dying of cancer. And we were able to do some work around reducing her pain initially, which we were able to do. And we did a hypnotic induction, which brought up some relationship issues.
And you actually did that over the telephone, right?
Yes. Which was really surprising, which was really mm-hmm. a gift. This mm-hmm. was over 1,200 miles away. And I asked her what she would like to achieve, you know, after developing some rapport with her. And she said she wanted to reduce some pain. And I asked her on a scale of, you know, 1 to 5, you know, how much pain she had. And she told me 5. And we explored how many points she would like to reduce. And she said 2. And, you know, we began talking after she told me what her intent was, just to kind of do a kind of a pre-induction, developing some rapport and some relaxation with her. And I did some mindfulness, kind of sensory motor skills with her. I brought her attention to her body in terms of focusing her attention on her hands and her fingers, which distracted her from her pain. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, you know, after this little 10-minute conversation, how she felt, and she said her pain was reduced by 50%.
Marvelous. And
which I was kind of astounded by that.
Yeah.
And so it kind of told me she had begun an induction. She was in kind of a hypnotic trance, and she kind of distracted the process, distracted her focus from the pain to the attention of her hands, kind of a sensory motor attentiveness, a mindfulness towards her fingers and her palm. And that reduced the pain. And I was able to lead her into a deeper hypnotic trance and induction, exploring various aspects and inviting her to let go, to discover resources and skills. Mm-hmm. And it deepened. And this took place over approximately 45 minutes.
Okay.
And we used some metaphor and story during the induction. And I asked her if I could have permission to ask her questions during this. And, you know, she was awake and aware, but very deep in her own relationship to herself, relaxed. And she told me she was very, very much into exploring other things. And what came about as a result of this, which was kind of a surprise to us, was her behavior and her role in her relationship to protect her husband from suffering about her own death. Mm. And this came out after this deep induction, which was a surprise to us. And how she was challenged to deal with her role to protect him while she was dying, mm-hmm. which I found very surprising. And we looked at ways that she could deal with herself differently while she was going through her own process of dying. Mm-hmm. And how her whole behavior, at the cost of herself and her freedom and sense of relief, was acted on at the expense of protecting somebody, protecting her husband. And she came up with the solution on her own of beginning to tell the truth about her predicament to her family and to her husband. And I could sense there was a deep feeling of relief there in her. And all of this was on the phone at long distance.
Yeah.
So things happen. Things do happen.
Yeah. It sounded like there was really some very exciting kind of unfolding in that situation, and that she came upon a solution to something that had been troubling her. that would make, in the end, make her passing easier for her.
Yes. And so that was a blessing around this process.
Yeah. And I just want to let our listeners know that you and I had briefly, you had described this to me briefly, and you wanted to get her permission before putting it out in the open like this, and that, in fact, you were able to obtain her permission to,
yes,
to
yes,
discuss it.
Yes, she gave me permission, and she was happy to do that, just, you know, to clear things up as far as confidentiality was concerned.
Yeah. Just in case anybody might be wondering about that, I thought we should put that out there.
Yes. I try to be very sensitive about confidentiality and being given the authorization to reveal detailed pieces of information about the patients that I work with.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, some people actually advocate that we should think about our death, that we should be mindful of it before, you know, before we're in those last moments. Did you ever read the Carlos Castaneda books on the teachings,
yes,
of Don Juan?
Yes.
It's been a long time since I read it. You might have a more clear recollection than I do. Probably many of our readers may not have read those. I seem to recall that part of the teaching, Don Juan was this Yaqui Indian, we might call him shaman or sorcerer or witch doctor. And Carlos Castaneda was a young anthropologist who is studying these native ways. And one of the central teachings of Don Juan was that Castaneda needed to keep his eventual demise really close at hand. Am I remembering that correctly? And why do you think? And do you think that's an important thing to do? And if so, why?
It's been some time as well since I read his books, and I recall a passage like that. My professional viewpoint as well as personal viewpoint is to keep that at hand. It's such a, how shall I put it, a very sensitive notion, yet I've discovered that through other readings, as well as the Don Quixote references, along with Ram Dass and others, that the exploration of our own death is very helpful in inspiring us to live a fuller life now.
Yes, definitely.
The recognition of impermanence brings with it an anxiety, and yet at the same time, it also brings with it an opportunity to heal that anxiety, that fear, in the present moment. So it becomes an ongoing, it can be an ongoing process, an opportunity to deal with life on a moment-by-moment basis, in terms of our fears and explorations and healing, letting go and understanding our relationships to ourselves and others in the moment. Some things take on a greater importance when we're learning to overcome our fears and our feelings and our judgments, as opposed to fighting the world and trying to change it. There seems to be a greater alignment, so to speak, with the flow of life, as opposed to trying to direct it or changing the direction of the river, so to speak.
I just needed to turn off a telephone that I forgot.
Sure.
To,
well, maybe it was an important call.
Maybe. I hope they call back, because I just hung up on them.
Well, in my own personal discovery, there seems to be a stillness and peace that comes about with my patients and myself and others that I've spoke to when we are willing to explore death and what it means and what it can mean. And it becomes an individual experiential discovery. And most of the people that I've spoken with have stated that there's a peacefulness that comes with acceptance in the moment.
Doesn't our culture give us a different message about death? It seems to me that death is a big taboo in our culture.
Yes. It's hidden from us. That's a very important fact that I've come to see, that the very notion of death and people dying is kept from us. We don't see that often unless we're somebody close to us is passing, unless somebody's famous. It's not around us.
Right.
And yet, in most other cultures, it's out there in the open, specifically in India, that comes to mind, where it's accepted, and people in many parts of India come to accept that as the passing, and they experience great awareness in that. So we tend to not deal with it, look at it, make it a part of our lives. It's not present there. And I see that as a great repression and a great denial.
Yes, yes. I've been influenced a lot by the existential humanistic. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Okay. I bumped my mouthpiece. Excuse me.
Okay. Yeah, I've been very influenced by the writings of Jim Bugenthal, who espoused a position characterized as existentialist humanist psychotherapy. And the existentialist point of view is that the denial of death and the denial of death anxiety, it can be as distorting as the repression of sex. So where Freud emphasized, you know, the ways in which denial of our sexuality could lead to distorted expressions in our lives, in our behavior, in our thoughts, in our experience. The existentialists believe that a similar thing can happen through the denial of death. Is that, would you be on the same page?
Yes, I would be on the same page at that. It's an interesting thing. The denial of death at the same time could be the denial of life.
Yeah. And another thing that strikes me, that I just as I was thinking about this upcoming interview, and I've thought about it, I guess, in the past too, is, you know, how when we deny something, the unconscious has a way of serving it up to us in some other form.
Yes.
And so the thing that I'm struck by is the contrast between how little direct experience of death most people in the U.S. At least have, on the one hand, and how much we bathe ourselves in it in the mass media in terms of movies, TV, fiction books. I'm thinking of TV shows that, you know, like Law and Order and Bones and CSI and so on. And, you know, there are murders every single night. What's going on with that?
That's a very very interesting point of view. I'm not sure if the relationship to ourselves around death is explored as opposed to the commercialism around death and how it's sold.
Right.
And I think there's a great gap there.
Yeah, definitely. Those shows are not about bringing us into a conscious relationship with death. But it's somehow in our quest to avoid death, at some level we are fascinated by it, I think.
Yes. Well, I think I know from my point of view, I want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And there's a little part of me honestly would say, can I bring all my toys and all the things I've accumulated? And will I be able to do all the same things that I'm doing now?
Yeah.
And there's that question about assurance, you know, will my health insurance take care of me? And I don't think so.
Right, right. Well, what thought, perspective, or philosophy, or spiritual belief personally gives you most comfort? frees you from that fear and anxiety about death?
Well, if I may, I have been reading The Course of Miracles for many years, and there's passages in there that give me great comfort.
Okay, that's a topic that has come up in a number of other interviews. Go ahead. I just wanted to note that.
Sure. And I happened to be reading through the book, and of course I knew about the interview, and I wanted to find some things that really would pertain to my thoughts around death and dying. And there happens to be a discourse or a lesson for the day has a name to it. And this particular one was very potent for me. And it said, "There is no death. The Son of God is free." And that brings up all notions of meanings and definitions. And the first line of the passage states, "Death is a thought that takes on many forms, often unrecognized. It may appear as sadness, fear, anxiety, or doubt, as anger, faithlessness, and lack of trust, concern for bodies, envy, and all forms in which the wish to be as you are not may come to tempt you." Mm-hmm. Now, it's very potent. And what it brings up for me are all the thoughts, the shadow thoughts about death, and the way my mind works, and how it attempts to soothe itself with external desires, with material things, and the lack of trust is a very important word there too. When I've come to discover that when there's fear, when I think about death, there is a component or a thought that I don't trust myself enough to bring myself to a place of loving or a place of peace, that something is triggered inside of me around sadness, fear, anxiety, or doubt about the fact that this being will die, will pass. Mm-hmm. And so it brings me great comfort to kind of investigate my judgments, and gives me an opportunity to forgive myself for judgments. And all manner of projections and ill reflections seem to pass. And there's a great release in that.
Okay. You know, you spoke of the book, The Course in Miracles. I'm also reminded of the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yes.
And I imagine that you're probably familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they advocate a Buddhist ideal of conscious death, conscious dying, to really be watching the process, I guess, as it unfolds.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I've heard stories that the Buddhist monks know when they're going to die. And they invite people to their dying as if it were a party.
Huh.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Which kind of infers to me that there's a great acceptance in that.
Yeah.
It's a great tribute to acknowledge it and invite other people to participate with that. And it's reported, and many of the literature speak about them taking three breaths and then letting go.
Wow. It reminds me, too, of that Dustin Hoffman movie. I don't know if you ever saw it. If you haven't seen it, I recommend it to you and to all listeners. It's called Little Big Man. And in the movie, there's this Indian chief, this American Indian chief, who quite often in the course of the movie says, "Today is a good day to die," you know, and then eventually he does. Have you seen that film?
Yes, you know, it's interesting. I forgot all about it until you mentioned that last statement. Today is a good day to die.
Yeah,
and what I admire is the way in which it was stated.
What is it about that?
Well, there is an acceptance in that. It didn't sound to me as if there was fear or apprehension in the statement.
Yes.
And that would be an incredible blessing. for us all, for myself, to have that kind of attitude and relationship to myself when that moment comes.
Yes.
Though I don't know how it will be.
Right, and none of us do. In fact, I heard Ram Dass, who you referred to earlier, I saw a film in which he talked about his relatively recent experience of he suffered a stroke after,
yes,
you know, having been a kind of a guru for many of us for many years. And certainly he held this ideal of being conscious in the moment of dying and so on. And he talks about his stroke. He talks about being stroked almost as if God or the universe or higher consciousness or something has stroked him, in the sense that maybe you would stroke a cat or something. But at any rate, mm-hmm, he had, of course, had long hoped that he would die with the word Ram, the name of God, on his lips. But he said, mm-hmm, he was so startled in the moment that he was stroked that he forgot to do that. There was just this moment of panic. So none of us know how we're going to react in that moment.
No.
And he didn't react as he had hoped and planned in that moment of stroke. And it sounded like then that he was struggling a little bit to come to terms with his own judgment around, you know, how he was supposed to respond in that moment.
Yes. I admire him, and I've heard many of his stories. I think in reference to one, I don't know if it was his biological mom or his stepmom, but in one of his stories about, I think, maybe conscious aging or conscious dying, he makes reference to being with his mother and being in the moment with her when she passed. And he stated that she took three breaths, just like a monk, a Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. And he was so amazed. He was in awe of that.
Yeah.
I think his last statement was, "Who was she?" And so, yes, I mean, everybody will face that. But, you know, and by the same token, while we're alive, we have an opportunity not to deny, not to repress, but to give attention to those thoughts and feelings now.
Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. This sort of begins to bring us full circle. How can we recover from the loss of a loved one? You've lost your father not so long ago. Time supposedly heals, but are there psychological techniques that can further aid that process of healing, or attitudes that you think are particularly useful?
I think there's many, 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 many things. I can't help but think of Kubler-Ross in the stages, mm-hmm, of dying and dealing with dying. And just to quote, I think the five or six areas, and that's the areas of denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance that we may or may not go through at various points and stages around the dying of a loved one or somebody that we know. I don't think there's just one way. For myself, I could speak. I know I cry still every day. Mm. And I allow the tears to flow and allow that process of grieving and letting go to help heal and help bring back the feeling of love and compassion back into myself.
Yeah.
I think there's a tendency, there can be a tendency to fall into denial and anger, lack of acceptance for what's happened. And at the same time, they're a mirror, they're a projection of our own relationship, I believe unconsciously, with ourself that we haven't yet faced. Mm-hmm. So it's in a very important way, it's a mirror. The death of another is a mirror of the unconscious drives within ourself, that part in ourself that we do not want to look at or deal with. And along with that, I think there's a great part of our life that we haven't dealt with as well. Many of the pains, angers, the disappointments, just in the process of life itself that we avoid. And I think it's very important to not repress. And I think that's part of it as well. Years of not dealing with things, not knowing how to, it becomes accumulated. It's like filling up an empty peanut butter jar and filling it with layers of peanut butter and then trying to get to the oil at the bottom or something. It takes some picking at. It takes some evolving. It takes some looking at. And, you know, what we don't want to look at will be very painful. So there's rage, there's anger, there's emotions that rise, and it becomes shocking and or horrifying to many of us at many levels. And from the perspective of opportunity as opposed to adversity, I choose to look at it as a guide, as a way, as a path to our heart, as opposed to something terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always been an easy perspective to come to. I've personally found myself sleeping in my own room of chaos and wanting to move to another quarters and not knowing how to do that, not knowing how to make the transition. And I've often asked myself, well, how do I do that? How do I move to another room that's much more heart-filled, much more objective, much more grace-filled, much more calm in the face of what's going to be inevitable?
And is there an answer that comes to you?
Keep working on myself. Keep finding ways to accept the feelings, the disappointments. Keep working on enjoying life in the moment. And along with the notion that everything is impermanent, I've come to see more clearly that even the pain and the denial, the angers, the upsets are not permanent as well. They do pass.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about death as a mirror that confronts us sometimes with our own, it stimulates things that we maybe don't want to look at. And that can happen, say, when somebody that we know has lost someone that's important to them.
Yes.
And I think many of us struggle with, well, how can I be with my friend who's lost someone who's important to them? What's the best way that I can be there for them or be with them as opposed to just avoiding them?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, what do you have any
Well, yeah, it's interesting you should ask that. I was just reading something recently by Cicely Saunders, who's a pioneer of the hospice movement in Britain. And if I may, she states, I'm going to quote one of her sentences. She says, I once asked a man who knew he was dying what he needed above all in those who were caring for him. He said, for someone to look as if they are trying to understand me. Indeed, it is impossible to understand fully another person. But I forgot that he did not ask for success, but only that someone should care enough to try.
Mm-hmm.
And essential that we care enough to try. Sometimes just listening and being still may be helpful. Maybe even asking, what is it that you need from me?
So that would apply both to the person who's lost someone who's close to them as well as to someone who might be going through the process of dying themselves.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we like to think that we know what's best for another person. Sometimes we feel helpless in the face of another person. And I think it's important to make our feelings known. We feel helpless. I feel helpless in this experience. I don't know what to do. Might be a wise thing to say. Please help me while we're together. And that those kind of statements and questions, I certainly think, can open a process of exploration and deeper rapport, and bring the experience that both people are listening to one another.
Well, Stephen Schaps, I want to thank you for being willing to share with us what is a difficult, for many of us, a difficult topic to look at and talk about. Thanks so much for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you very much. It was an opportunity, and I'm glad to have gotten to speak with you again, David.
I hope you found my interview with Stephen Schaps meaningful. At the top of the interview, I mentioned that I had previously interviewed Stephen for my Wise Counsel podcast at www.wisecounselpodcast.com. But to give you a little more background, I actually met Stephen in a weekend workshop that I co-led at the Esalen Institute with my friend Dr. Ron Alexander. You might recall my interview with Ron on Shrink Wrap Radio number 29, and I'm hoping to interview Ron again before too long. At any rate, Stephen was a participant in our Esalen workshop where I got to know him. As I recall, I think he had been in a number of Ron's training workshops. I found Stephen to be friendly, open, and warm, and I hope that is the experience you had of him just now. Stephen does have a website, and I'll put a link to that in our show notes. If you're in the Portland area, you might want to contact him to see if he has any upcoming workshops or trainings, or to work with him in therapy. Death is a fact of life. In fact, I'm not sure life would have any meaning without the figure ground backdrop provided by death. It's not a topic that most of us seek out. In fact, it'll be interesting to me to look at the download statistics for this show to see to what extent listeners might have avoided it. It would not surprise me if that happens. Yet I entirely agree with Stephen that death presents us with many opportunities for growth and learning. He made many references to heart in our conversation. When those around us are sick or dying or have lost loved ones, we are really challenged to open our hearts, to be present and not to abandon them, either physically or psychologically or emotionally. There are tremendous opportunities for unparalleled intimacy in being with a dying person or being there for a grieving friend. Now I know this in my head and my heart, and at the same time, my own fears and avoidances have robbed me of some of these opportunities in the past. I hope to do better in the future. I recognize that this is an area in which I need to grow. As we mentioned in our discussion, our culture doesn't necessarily provide us with healthy messages about death. My own mother died of cancer a number of years ago, and sometime not too long after her death, we took our kids to Disneyland in Southern California, and one of the so-called attractions or rides that we went on was some sort of haunted house with ghosts and skeletons popping up to scare us. And with my mother's death still so near, the whole haunted house thing struck me as disturbed and bizarre, somehow reflective of our cultural fear of death. Did the fact of my mother's death suddenly turn her into a scary monster? Not to me. That seemed very weird. I think psychologically, to the extent that we reject and deny death, it may in fact return to haunt us as a scary monster.
Let us all come together to see what we can find. Shrink Wrap Radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Let us all remember what you seek is what you find. Dr. Dave is here to remind you it's all in your mind. Exploring our spirit and our psyche, we are learning here to unwind. And shrink wrap radio is here to remind you it's all in your mind. We're all in your mind. We're all in your mind.
Jerry Trumbull and I had a good time speaking with our guest, Doug Davis, on last week's Shrink Wrap Radio Live. I don't think I got the announcement out early enough for many people to show up live, though. And then there was the problem that I'd forgotten to indicate to Blog Talk Radio that the show was supposed to run for an hour, and their default is 15 minutes, so those who did show up live got cut off after the first 15 minutes. My apologies for that. Fortunately, I recorded the whole thing and was able to put it on the feed the whole hour for all who wanted to listen. However, we're not planning to do a live show this weekend. I'm a little bit concerned that if I try to keep up the pace of this past month, which with the regular interview and a weekend live show turned out to be two podcasts a week, I'm a little worried that I might burn out at that rate. And I'm also concerned that you, the listeners, might burn out on 2 hours of Dr. Dave a week. So Jerry and I are thinking we'll make it a more occasional thing, maybe once a month, and probably not with a guest, but with us discussing things of interest to us in the psychological news. Now, in fact, I've put a poll on our website that you can answer that poses the question as to whether we should keep up the live podcasts, and you're even able to add your own answer if you don't like the alternatives I've put on the poll. And of course, if you want to comment on this issue at greater length, I'd encourage you to use the comments area on our website. I don't know if any of you have taken advantage of the opportunity to order a Shrink Wrap Radio t-shirt from our website. There are many colors, styles, and sizes to choose from. And as I've mentioned before, I don't make any money on these, but I'd love to think of folks out there walking around in these things. And let me remind you that if you're listening to this show but not subscribed, please do subscribe. It costs nothing. On the right-hand side of each page at shrinkwrapradio.com is an icon that says subscribe in iTunes. Just click on that, or you can subscribe at the podshow.com site. And speaking of iTunes, we did see our biggest jump in listeners back when iTunes featured us on their podcast page. And there's no way for certain to make that happen again, although I would love to see that happen. And so many of you write wonderful things to me, give wonderful feedback in the emails. Can I get you, if you haven't already done so, to go to the iTunes store, then to Shrink Wrap Radio, and leave some of those choice comments there? It'll be a big help. And if you're in the U.S., if you send me a copy of your positive, genuine positive review, then I'll send you a book. So thanks for that. And it's been a while since we had any new additions to the Frapper map, and there are many countries and states that are not represented. So if you haven't added yourself to the Frapper map yet, please do so. You'll find a link on the website. And as always, the sponsors for this show are Podshow and GoDaddy. You can purchase the domain name deathismyfriend.com by using the code SHRINK3 at checkout from GoDaddy.
Hello, Dr. Dave. This is Elaine from Mount Hamilton, California. My partner and I started an interesting conversation this morning. We were debating the difference between hominids versus other mammals. And some of this thought was based around my current exploration with the Sims. And it seems like other mammals boil down to basic behaviors of hunt, play, sex, fight, and sleep. And hominoids have hunt, play, sex, fight, think, build, sleep. It's all in your mind.
Hi, Elaine. Thanks for sending that voicemail. You know I love it when listeners do that. Well, you've given us some food for thought here. Hominids includes the great apes. So I'd agree that they too, like us, probably also think and build. However, there's a good chance that if you go even lower on the phylogenetic scale, you'll find thinking and building. Birds build nests and beavers build dams and so on. Maybe you have something a bit more creative in mind, though, when you refer to building. I've sent off an invitation to Dr. Jack Panksepp, who has done a lot of comparative research on emotion and play in animals and humans. So let's hope that interview comes through. In other email, I recently heard from Nir in New York City, who along with a friend is responsible for the theme music you hear on this show. Nir's note is a follow-up on the topic of desire, which came up in our live interview with Tom Barbalay. Nir writes, "Personally, my quest did not end until I reached faith, which is at the limit of the mind or consciousness or intelligence in terms of levels of abstraction. My personal experience is that beyond wisdom is the divine. This cannot ever be proven, only experienced subjectively. It requires a leap, but it is the only final and ultimate way to satisfy this kind of craving that I sense we share. I hope I'm not sounding weird. Your podcast is one of my greatest pleasures. Keep in touch, Nir." Well, Nir doesn't sound weird to me at all. And let's do keep in touch. And as always, thank you for the theme music. Rafael, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, had posted a comment on the website, and I inquired if he was in the U.S. or abroad. And as I suspected, he is abroad. He writes, "Hi, Dr. Dave, I'm in Poland, Warsaw, at least sometimes when I do not travel due to my work-related issues. I often take my iPod with your latest episodes and listen to it on board. Some time ago, I found that listening is sometimes the only way my tired brain can still get to know something. I am sure I will be listening, maybe more challenging to comment. I started only 5 weeks before, so there's tons of episodes I have overdue. Many thanks and best in 2008, Rafael." And thank you so much for that. I'm glad to welcome you as a new listener there in Warsaw, Poland. And you've got lots of content to feast your brain upon. Next, we hear from Susan, who has faithfully shown up for each of our live podcasts. She's visually challenged, and so the blog talk site has created some problems, but she's struggled through nonetheless. And she writes with a suggestion saying, "Here's a suggestion for robotics AI interviewee. Robin Murphy, University of South Florida, does search and rescue robots, as in mine disasters, World Trade Center. She's very soft-spoken and hard-minded in her approach and widely admired in computing. She has a joint appointment with psychology, but she's mainly an engineer. Some topic like anthropomorphism and robots would be fascinating. So Google Robin Murphy robot for her homepage, book, and safety center." And she goes on to say, "I don't blame you for not wanting to change from blog talk radio, as you have a lot of content there. My favorite podcaster, Allison Sheridan of podfeet.com, has used TalkShoe some." Susan. Well, Susan, let me know if you find TalkShoe easier for you to use. If it is easier for you, maybe I'll, you know, try switching over. But if they're pretty much equivalent in the problems that they present, then I'll probably just, it would be easier for me to stick with Blog Talk Radio. And thanks for that suggestion about Robin Murphy. I will look into that one. And then we hear from Brian in Reading, Pennsylvania, who also writes with a guest suggestion. Brian writes, "I'm a fairly new listener, and I love the podcast. It gives a great bird's-eye view of what is happening in psychology. Thanks for your work. You need to have K. Anders Ericsson, the Dr. Edward Conrad Eminent Scholar Chair of Psychology at Florida State University, on the show." And he gives a link to him. He says he's the editor of the monumental work, Cambridge Handbook of Expertise and Expert Performance. And he gives a link to that. He says, "I do not work in psychology, but I actually read all of this research because it's so fascinating. He is the world expert on expertise and has been interviewed by everyone." Well, not quite everyone. Not until I interview him. Brian goes on to say, this would be a great podcast. Thanks, Brian, in Reading, Pennsylvania. And Brian, I would point you and other listeners to my show, number 19, in which I interviewed another expert on expertise from the University of Southern California. That show was called The Predictive Errors of Political Experts with Philip Tetlock, PhD. And Tetlock had been profiled in The New Yorker, or there was I think he had either written an article or there was a review of his book in The New Yorker magazine, and I was able to get through to him and interview him. So if you're interested in expertise, be sure to check that one out. Well, we'll finish up with one more. This one is from Alana, who I believe teaches art in the UK. And Alana writes, hello, Dr. Dave. Thank you so much for your show. I have all the available episodes downloaded to my iPod and computer and use them frequently with my students and as a stimulus for my own research and thinking. Jung has influenced my artistic practice for a long time now, since reading his foreword to The Secret of the Golden Flower in 1977, and I use a form of sand play with my art students. I would be very interested in hearing an episode on sand play therapy, perhaps a program similar to the one on your tarot reading. That's a wonderful suggestion, and I have known people over the years who do sand play work, and no one readily comes to mind for that show, but I will definitely keep it in mind. She writes, I keenly await the next Shrink Wrap radio show, Alana. And so I think that'll wrap it up for the email for today. Remember, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. And that in addition to emails, you can also leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype where our name is ShrinkPod. You can leave voice messages on our MyChingo link on the site or leave something on our voicemail at 206-337-0622. Thanks again to my friend Stephen Shapps for sharing his perspectives on death. I'm not sure who my next guest will be. I've got to get back on the stick here, what with the new year, and dig up some guests. I've sent out inquiries, but not everybody's gotten back to me, so I'll have to redouble my efforts. So for now, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.